Tune in at www.darkcityradio.com. You can find us by searching Dark City Radio on Facebook or Twitter.
Good evening, Dark City Radio. It's the Permaculture Show, and this week I wanted to just sort of bring it right back to the battle application of them. So Bob's here, and we're going to chat about that and the rest of the Dark City crew, so please feel free to jump in and, you know, add your interpretation or, you know, tell me I'm talking shit or whatever. So, first of all, one of the first principles of permaculture is observing. And this really is a massive subject in itself. When I started to look at some of the land I wanted to develop, you know, first of all, I looked at the bigger picture, really. It's, you know, the your garden, and then the bigger picture of the sort of local area. So obviously we're in, you know, us in the UK here, we've got a temperate climate, it's a maritime climate. Usually, not at the minute, we have shifting air masses, mainly from the west, which brings us rain and generally here, our growing season will tend to be about 7 to 8 months. Although, you know, that's a whole other subject in itself, extending growing periods. So the prevailing air mass controls the climatology, really. So I'm landlocked here. and I'm amongst urban conditions, which itself brings a whole different aspect into the microclimate of the area. Birmingham's actually on a plateau here. So, you know, as you start to look at the bigger picture like this, you can kind of build up how your growing conditions are affected and what to put in that will just grow without too much input from yourself. So we're quite high above sea level here, and our land is sedimentary rock. And actually, 70% of the Midlands is agricultural. So the urbanisation is mainly focused on this Birmingham plateau where I am. And in contrast to that, we've also got 8,000 areas of parkland. So when you start to look at your area like this, you can build up. It's the very basic formulation of a plan, really. So then I went on to look at, obviously, the weather patterns and the rainfall. We get quite heavy rain here. You know, we do get extremes of weather, snow being one of them as well. And then we also get what is called an urban heat island, which is basically a man-made microclimate. So this is the area where most people sort of live and work. And so we get a reduced sky view factor. We get a decrease in long wave radiation and loss radiation trapping. We can get slower wind speeds and decrease in turbulent heat loss. On to look at the actual site that I was going to be growing on and built up a picture of what I'd got there. So it's surrounded by houses. There's a 6-acre wood 1 mile away. It's 3 miles to Birmingham where the land rises. It's 5 miles to Dudley where the land rises again. And I'm also 5 miles away from Sandwell Valley Park, Country Park. So that all helps me to build up a picture of what I can grow on my land according to these conditions. So before I even do anything on the allotment, then I look at what I don't need to do. If you don't know what to do, do nothing. So I got this compost heap on my allotment. The council had taken off the top layer, which I think they thought was helpful, but they just dumped it in these 3 pallet bins, totally full, all full of cooch, all full of bramble. So I couldn't do anything with it. And neither could I do anything with the soil that was left because it was compacted and it had become grown over by bramble and couch. So I didn't do anything went to the compost heap and it was left there for 2 seasons. And then after that, I thought, oh, well, I really need to kind of shift this out. And when I went to start digging it out, it was full of worms, and I was really amazed. And I couldn't realise how these worms had got in there. But then I realised in the allotment next to me, there's a big under compost, all the couch and bramble had dried out through the time, and then all the leaves had been taken into the compost heap. So it was actually really, really beautiful soil. Which is amazing, and that's just from literally doing nothing. So yeah, so I mean, this is all still observation. You know, they say that you should observe a site for a year before you do anything on it, and have a look at where your frost pockets are, where the heat is trapped, where the sun falls throughout the year, and then as you take all this information down, you're building up an even better picture of what is suited to your site. So the next thing you would look at is indicator plants, so the plants that are growing there already, and that gives you an idea of what your soil is like. So we had dandelions on there, and we had couch grass on there, and we've got nettles on there, which tells you that we've got rich soil.
Nerissa, are you there, hon? It looks like Nerissa's dropped off for the moment. She does have a very bad connection, so we do have to bear with her. I'm sure she's chattering away in the background about how nettles are apparently a really good indicator that you've got good rich soil, and not only that, you can eat them. And you can also use them as a kind of green mulch on your land as well, if you need to introduce some nutrients to your land.
And also you can make rope and things from nettles as well. That's something else that people haven't looked at, because they've got very strong fibres, and paper is another thing that nettles are great for.
Well, these are some of the skills that we actually need to relearn. So have you got any idea how we go about making paper from nettles?
Well, paper shouldn't be too difficult. What you basically do is you ret them. Ret means to rot. So you put them in a big tub of water, and everything kind of rots off them except for the fibre, and then you can use that fibre the same as you do. And it looks like we've got Nerissa back, and we might have Bob Earthwise back.
Hi,
yeah.
Guys, you both back?
Yes, I'm
cool. Back. Take it away.
Yes, I wasn't rambling too much then, was I?
You were sounding good to us, Nerissa.
Oh, good. I quite like the idea of everyone having a buzzer, so if I start rambling. So, right, so where to get to? Soil indicator plants, yes. So I also had clover on there, which told me it was a nitrogen fixer. Bramble, which tells me it's rich soil. So building up a picture of what it's like. So then we take some soil samples, you know, and really start to think about what soil fertility is. It's quite an interesting question, actually. I wonder if anyone else has got, this is my definition of soil fertility. The support system that enables life from below the ground to grow and flourish above the ground. It is part of an ecosystem that sustains and draws benefit from many genetically diverse species. Has anyone else got a definition of soil fertility? Bob?
No, that sounds perfectly good to me. The more diverse the soil, the greater the soil's ability to support life.
Yeah, and it's amazing. It's really, I suppose, because you're emulating nature, it's just starting that happening. Because like I was saying there with the compost heap, it was amazing because, so the leaves fell in and then the worms just came, you know, and that was like, permaculture without permaculture, because it just happened and I observed it.
Permaculture is just trying its very best to replicate nature. nature is the highest authority in permaculture. So when something happens as of its own accord, that's exactly what permaculture is.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I've got this, it's only a tiny little bed. It's only probably in my back garden, about 2 meters by 6 meters. But I've been working on it for years now, and the soil is so nice. I've only ever mulched it. I've never dug it. And that just has naturally clover coming through. And also viola, which is edible. So,
What colour clover?
It's white.
White?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, brilliant. That's the indigenous one.
The
whole of the countryside is polluted with purple clover.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realise that the purple. Is it from Bob?
Which, the purple clover?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think it's American.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to fit more nitrogen than our own native clover. But on the other hand, it's more invasive.
Yeah, so they serve as the ground cover now, and they've pretty much, you know, colonised the bed, so... I've got a fig tree in there as well, so they just sit happily with that. I've got some primroses in there. It's a really, I don't know, I don't suppose it's strictly permaculture, because a lot of it's been instinctive as to what to put in when to create a little happy kind of system. So there's a little niche plant in there. For everything, you know, I mean, I've got obviously the dandelions, I've got a really deep root, so they're good for sort of breaking up the soil and getting more nutrients brought up. And I've just put, I hope they germinate, some wild garlic seeds in there. So, is your
Ramsons?
Yes, Ramsons. Is your is it up by you now? Probably is, isn't it?
Sorry?
Is the wild garlic up now?
It's just coming. It's an early plant. Outside the front of where I live, I have tricorn leeks, which are very similar. Identical flowers. It's just the leaves that are different. But yeah, they're an early thing.
Yeah,
they come up with the bluebells and the snowdrops.
I seem to come up a little bit later here. I'm not sure why. We are in a bit of a dip. It might be because of that. I'm not sure. going back to sort of looking at your land and building up this picture. A soil assessment is the next thing. So, aside from looking at the plants on the top, we do like, I don't know if you've used this one, Bob, like a double spade method. So you dig down with the spade, but then you actually dig out a trench, so you don't actually compact any of the soil yourself. So you can get it out in one nice big piece and start having a look at it, and then you can really look at the structure of it and see if it's sort of compacted anywhere, see how many stones are in there, and see how many earthworms are in there, or any other sort of life, and then sort of really start to have a look at the soil itself. So you can have a look to see if it's got how much organic matter it's got in there. Basically the best way to do it is get some and then spit in it and then squidge it up. And
there's a lot of spit involved in permaculture.
Yeah, and mud. That's why I like it. Just love mud, really.
I mean, basically with soils, I mean, on a very simple level, you know, what's your water like? You know, is it hard or soft? And if it's soft water, likely you're going to have an acid soil. And if it's hard water, likely you're going to have an alkali soil. You know, hard water comes from chalk, so...
Yeah, there's that test you can do as well, isn't there? I haven't tried it myself. Have you? I'm going to get this the wrong way around now. So if you put vinegar in your soil and it foams, then it's alkali. And if you put bicarb in your soil and it foams, then it's acid.
That's correct. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's good. That's just what I mean, you know. Just these things you can actually do where gardening.
Well, that's a good thing that people could try, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
it's simple and it's stuff you got in the cupboard at home.
Mm.
Well, maybe they can, you know, email in all their different soil types.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, that'd be really cool. I mean, that's the other thing I like about permaculture, that it is constant research and.
Yeah, but I bet you never thought it would turn into a phone party, though.
Oh, no. Scary. So, yeah. Oh, I've lost my train of thought now. You've excited me.
Sorry. No, it is important to know what sort of soil you've got.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Well, and, you know, it's just common sense, isn't it? Because as you build these pictures up, then you're more likely to put something in place that's actually going to work and sort of foresee, you know, any kind of problems and, you know, sort of eliminate them by already having it all set in place.
Well, the other thing, of course, is the plants will tell you. You know, if you put an acid-loving plant into an area that's alkali, it will look very unhappy.
Mm.
You know, so when you're growing stuff, keep an eye on it. You know, does it look right? Mm. If it always looks unhappy, it shouldn't be though.
Definitely. Well, I think it's always nice to kind of take that time. I mean, I do regularly. We've only got a tiny garden. Go around and have a little stroll, see how well everything's getting on.
Well, all the plants need to communicate with you. You know, they're there because you've invited them into your space. You know, you're their guardian, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they know it. You know, and they know that you're there looking after them, so they're going to communicate with you. You know, that's what, you know, we have DMT for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, all the plants have got it, we've got it, and that's how nature communicates.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying earlier about, you know, when you do start to kind of study the space around you like this for, you know, it gives you a great sense of place, you know, and it kind of does really bring you present. And like I was saying earlier, you know, listening to Sarah and everyone talking about grounding, and I was wondering how I grounded myself, or if indeed I did. And then I realised through pondering on this today that this is how I ground myself, by thinking about the, you know, environment like that. So, yeah, that's a bit of a revelation for me earlier. So, yeah, and I think the sort of other thing to think about soil-wise, really, is... you know, if you're in an urban environment, it can be contaminated. I think I'm just trying to get the council now to test the soil on our allotments, because the area we're in is massively industrial. So it probably is contaminated.
Well, I think you'll find that they should have that on record.
Oh, well, yeah. Apparently they don't, but I mean, you know what, I know it has been an allotment, as far as I can find out, it's been an allotment since at least the German wars.
well, since the Second World War.
Yeah, that's it. All it all goes a bit vague. I mean, it's amazing how vague the council can be, considering how much paperwork they do, isn't it? They've got loads of paperwork, but they never know anything.
Exactly. We're finding this out more and more, and it's, you know, across the country, all these councils are, over the years, learned how to become very devious.
Yeah, well, I mean, this thing, you know, we've been trying to get this, well, someone had set up a community interest company for our allotment, and there was loads of stuff going on, and I don't know if I mentioned to you before, I went to a meeting with the council, and they told me they didn't know what permaculture was, and then told me that you couldn't permaculture an allotment. So I've been pondering on it. I sent her some links of large-scale permaculture projects. I sent her an email saying I was concerned. It'd been bothering me that she didn't think you could permaculture an allotment. So I sent her some permaculture links. But she sent me quite a nice email back saying, you know, they'd be happy to develop an allotment along permaculture principles.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I thought you were about to say they sent a letter back saying they were going to ban nature.
No.
You have no nature in our allotments. You have to buy all your seed from Monsanto.
Well, that is a point worth mentioning as well, though. You know, there are some kind of trials of practicing permaculture on allotments because of the allotment holders. Don't necessarily like it, do they?
Well, no. You know, I mean, it's being able to explain that actually snails and slugs do have a part to play. Mm. And what you need to do is to give them plants that they like to eat that you are prepared to sacrifice. And be encouraging in other animals that will control them. You know, that's what permaculture is. It's a balance between everything, you know.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I do know some people that have been chucked off allotment sites for it, but yeah, you're right. It's all down to how you communicate it.
For refusing to use slug pellets.
Well, no, I think it's more the, you know, if people are mulching, and obviously, really, when you're trying to get going, you just chuck whatever you've got down on the ground to cover it to start with, you know, and it's from an unsightly point of view, the people I've spoke to. It's things like dandelions, isn't it? Because I wouldn't dig up dandelions, but then it's the seed dispersal thing as well.
Well, the trick is not to allow it to get to that point, isn't it? If you're encouraging dandelions, make sure that you pick the flowers.
Yeah, I have started making a syrup from dandelion flowers.
I mean, they're perennials anyway, so the fact that they won't have seeded is pretty irrelevant with dandelions.
Well, they're kind of a perfect crop in a way, because I mean, if you dig up roots as well.
You disappeared again, Norris.
Obviously, you wouldn't eradicate them completely. They're like potatoes in that way, I suppose. They just keep growing. So you kind of keep a nice little cycle going on, don't you, really?
It's the same with nettles.
Yeah. Again, that's... well, it is. It's, you see, it's looking, observing. You know.
Has Norris gone again?
Yeah, Norris has. Getting back to the nettles bit. We were talking about nettles.
Yeah.
And they're a really, really beneficial weed that most people hate in their gardens. And for two very good reasons. Firstly, they have way more nutrients than spinach does and taste very similar. And of course, where you have a nettle boundary, people are less likely to want to wade through it. So, you know, a lot of these plants are good security plants as well. And we need to think very carefully about what we try to eradicate, because often what we put in its place is very invasive. You know, take rhododendrons. I'm particularly here in Dorset, they're rampant through our woodland. And then, you know, all sorts of other invasive plants that have been brought over. But we should really look after the ones that love to live here.
Definitely. Well, we'll be celebrating the nettle this year. We've just started, we've been dying for the nettles to come through so we can start making soup. We're actually also looking at making a kind of a, you know, you see all these superfood, everyone's talking about these superfoods now. So we're going to make like, we're going to dry some nettle and then mix it with some other stuff that we know will just grow well, that he's already growing. I've got lots of marjoram and thyme. Oh, actually, I don't know if anyone can help, right? Because we've got this recipe and all of that. Know we've got available locally, and there's just one thing there.
Sounds like Nyrese has disappeared, but one good thing to try would be nettle beer. There's a little micro brewery fairly close to where I live, and they do a nettle beer in the spring, and it is the most bright green beer you've ever seen, but the taste is absolutely delicious. So I recommend nettle beer.
Am I back on? Can you hear me?
I can now.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I don't know if you caught that, yeah. Our superfood mix that we're going to make up with nettles and some other sort of locally grown stuff, like a real just sort of full of nutrient kind of thing that you can put in stews or on salads. We were looking today, though, because the recipe we've got contains dulse. Do you know much about seaweed?
Only that there's a lot of it near where I live.
Ah, see, it's perfect for you, but we're landlocked. We were trying to think of an alternative, but we couldn't really think of one because obviously it's kind of the sodium content and the calcium content that's why it's in there, and we couldn't think of a kind of land plant alternative. I don't think there would be one really, would there?
Well, there must be. I'll tell you a little secret that not many people know. There are only two species on the planet that have THC receptors in their brains. And of course, you know, we all know that man is one. And the other one is sea urchins. So there must be an equivalent in the ocean to everything that there is on land. And that kind of makes sense, being that all life came from the ocean anyway.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, far bigger space than the land that we all occupy. So I think that it would be good logic that there would be way more there than we even know about already.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I suppose I've never pondered really on the ecosystems of the sea so much because I'm inland. So I've pondered more on forests than seas. That's really interesting. I have to think about
that's where we came from, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Originally,
of course, no, it makes total sense.
I was quite surprised that, you know, there was a big connection between man and sea urchins. I can't find one that will give me a deal, though.
Typical. Have you never heard? Sea urchins are always tight. Have you never heard?
No. Good. I'm glad you got onto that one.
Never trust a sea urchin. Just turtles.
Yeah, it's always wet. That's the problem.
So, yeah, anyway, going back to kind of building up this picture. So that's kind of all the information, really, we're sort of looking at on sites. I sort of didn't mention, really, that we have talked about it in a roundabout way, that we kind of harvested as we went, really, on these sites and used what we could for, you know, what its use were. And as you say, everything pretty much has a use. I haven't tried yet, but I'd really like to try. One of the members of the permaculture group was saying years ago they used to use bramble for weaving, and they'd use like a tin can and put a little hole in and then pull the bramble through to get all the spines off. And then if you think about it, it's an amazing kind of really pliable thing, isn't it, that you could really, you know, make cool stuff with. You haven't tried that?
I've not heard of that at all before.
No, I think it's I think it was an old family member she heard it from. Yeah, it was just obviously something, you know.
I think it's get your own back on bramble time. I just had a vision of pulling it through a can and seeing all the prickle things that give you hell normally just pinging off into the distance.
I know. They are, aside from nettles though, they are my other favourite.
I eat nettles. I get my own back. That's really easy.
I know, but I think brambles, I've probably whittled away about brambles before. They're just amazing because, again, they're just so, you know, their will to grow is just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. You need to harness the energy in plants like that.
And I mean, the one that I've got in the back garden, I've seen it, you know, parts of it will get rust, but they'll just die off.
Yeah.
And the rest of it's fine. It can be covered in aphids and still have loads of fruit. It's all the same as what we've been saying.
Well, and that invites the ladybirds in and... Mm-hmm.
You know, and the birds.
Yeah, exactly. This is what permaculture is.
It's
making sure there's an environment where everything can survive.
Yeah.
And live in abundance. That's the key. You know, everything in abundance.
Well, I kind of got this theory because when the council took off the top layer of the allotment, that's what grew, you know, cooch grew back, obviously, and brambles. You know, they're almost like the earth putting like a chain on the top of itself, sort of saying, leave me alone. You've ravaged me and that you should just leave me alone because, you know, you couldn't do anything with it. And it was almost like it was sort of telling you that, you know. So, yeah, nature is amazing. So yeah, anyway, from that, I drew up what's called a base map. So that will usually have all that information on that we talked about there, you know. So you could kind of build up a really good picture of what you've got to work with. And then you can have on there the gradient of your land. That's obviously another quite important thing. My allotment is at the top of a slight gradient, unfortunately, although it is on a flat itself. So the soil dries out quite quickly on the top. Where we're building the forest garden is the opposite because that's at the bottom of a gradient. So that gets lots of nutrients because they're all washed off down to that area. And then is the really good bit, because that's what's overwhelming, especially if you take on an allotment or a larger piece of land, of just, what do I do with it?
and if you've got sea urchins, watch out, because that's a whole different...
Things
you've got to look at. Yeah, they dry out, but only at high tide. And...
Yeah, although actually, my next...
They're after your weave at the end of the day.
My next-door neighbour's got a bath that he's put out in his front garden. He had a new bathroom over in the... I'm going to go around, see if I'm going to bury it up the allotment. can have a little family of sea urchins up there. I could grow my own dogs then as well. Oh, I feel a plan coming together.
Really?
It might be too labour intensive, I don't know. I'll have to do a spider diagram to work it out.
I've just been told there's no sea urchins in Japan anymore because they've eaten them.
Yeah, they do. Well, I don't like, I can't eat them. I don't like fish. I can't eat any kind of fish. It's weird, isn't it? I think I might have lived in Iceland in a previous life and eaten a lifetime of fish. Because now I can't, it's really weird. I can't eat it.
No.
Anyways, the random...
Well, yeah, I was just thinking how you'd get on with aquaponics then.
Well, I mean, I have looked after fish, and we did used to have a tank, and I used to, just a little tank, and I used to, you know, rinse out the sponge and feed the plants with that. That was okay. But it's, no.
That's not fish for food, though, is it?
No, I couldn't eat fish from a an aquaponic system, no. It's really strange. I can't smell fish or touch it. It's really weird. I don't know what it is. And I've tried. I've tried. But, yeah, there you go. So, apparently you can eat snails.
So are you vegetarian then?
No, I'm not vegetarian, no. I don't eat a massive amount of meat. I have been pondering on it recently, whether I should. I have been before. But obviously issues with meat are just getting worse and worse.
Well, for what it's worth, when you're man, you eat things that are living or have lived. Mm. And it doesn't matter what type of species it is, it lived. So all the people that get upset for one reason or another need to think about that.
Yeah,
and as man, we share at least 80% of the same DNA of everything else that lives. Everything else, 80%.
Oh, it's quite scary. So it's all cannibalism.
No, it's not scary.
No, what I mean, theoretically, it's all cannibalism then, isn't it, really?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it to that extreme. But, you know, if you don't like to eat living things, what are you going to do? Eat rocks?
Yeah, and I mean, I think really, if you eat meat, you've got to be prepared to kill the animal yourself, haven't you, really?
I think that you need to be in a position where you can graciously accept the life that you're about to consume. And that applies, you know, whether it's, you know, a mammal or a fish or a reptile or a plant. I mean, really, there's no difference, is it?
No, not at all, no.
Yeah, if you go and buy a bag of alive in the same way that they were in the ground, admittedly they can regenerate from that bag, which of course if you go and buy a chicken, if you stick that in the ground, it won't.
Mm.
Yeah, there is a difference there. However, you know, people seem to like to draw a difference between one form of life and another. And in fact, if you think that a potato can regenerate, even from a bag in a supermarket, if you then stick it in boiling water, that's kind of the same as lobsters and crabs, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
They have eyes as well.
They do, yeah.
You know, so come on, I don't eat anything with eyes.
Yeah. So that's blown my mind a bit now. That's another thing I'll have to ponder on.
Well, the thing is, everything we eat either is or was alive. Everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't eat stuff that never was. Well, you can. I mean, you can sit and eat carbon if you want. Yeah, munch on bits of charcoal. Oops. And I guess, you know, a bit of Himalayan salt, that'd do you good. But you couldn't survive on it.
No. You could, so you're not vegetarian then?
No, I'm part of nature. Mm. You know, if I was supposed to be a vegetarian, I would have eyes on the side of my head. And my teeth would keep growing. As it is, so I have to pay out a fortune in dentist bills because I only get one set. And my eyes look false, usually.
We have got a local butcher. So, you know, I'm pretty lucky there. He's
They're invaluable.
The meat,
you know, all the stuff you get in supermarkets, you know, if you do eat meat, it's very difficult to trust. If you've got a good butcher, you know, in your local town or village, use him.
Use him
because his knowledge is invaluable.
Oh, they're great. He's great, honestly. You know, if you could get an honest butcher, God, it's certainly goes a long way. I know he was telling me that he knows of other butchers that will buy turkeys in June when they're like dirt cheap and then freeze them and then defrost them and sell them as fresh at Christmas, stuff like that. Pretty awful. And that's just scratching the surface of the meat world, isn't there? There's a lot more horrific goings on than that.
Well, it applies to the whole corporate world. It doesn't matter whether it's food or anything else, pharmaceuticals. They're all as bad as each other. And this is, you know, the major problems that we're facing. And this is what permaculture tries to address.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, that's the other... I know I've talked about it before, but seeds was the other thing I wanted to mention again because I've been pondering on that today. And obviously it's so important for people to, you know, start seed banks. And I mean, you know, starting a seed bank isn't anything. Just get a box, a bag and tell everyone you're doing it. And it's amazing, you know, especially if you already know other gardeners, that how people will just come and start putting seeds in, and you know, kind of you start to build up this little local seed bank, and hopefully eventually it'll all be heritage seeds, but I just want to get the concept going for people, really. And they're into it, and we've been doing it, and anyone can do it. It's so important now, so important to be in ownership of your own food.
Well, the key thing with seed banks, of course, is to think about it at the other end of the summer. Because right now, most people don't have any.
No.
You know, what are they going to do? You know, how are they going to... I mean, from my point of view, I think growing herbs is one of the favourite things. No, I mean, it's... I was just trying to say that one of the key things to do is to grow herbs. I mean, they're one of the most medicinal plants that we have, and really simple ones like thyme and rosemary, sage. They all grow here really easily. They're native. And some of the more Mediterranean ones, oregano, etc. Yeah, and people are putting into chat ginger, we can grow ginger here and chili. Mm. And all of these things are really beneficial. And they love to grow for you as well. You know, if you put one in and you put a little bit of energy, it will reward you 10 times. And you'll feel it. It's the DMT.
We've just got so much of that, so we may...
Well, I can't hear you again, Nerys.
Kind of observation. That's really the kind of things you want to be taking into account. I've got all these details of how I built up this picture of our site and loads of resources in a Dropbox file if anyone wants access to it. There's a load of ebooks and all sorts in there, and growing calendars and those things about testing your soil. I think there's a thing on there that tells you, it's a soil texture test that tells you how you can work out what sort of soil you've got. So you can friend me on Facebook, Nerys, or join the Sandwell and Birmingham Permaculture Group, and then email me and I can send you an invite if anyone wants to join on to that.
Put all the info under the podcast.
Yeah, good idea. I keep forgetting about that type of thing.
Then it relates to what people have listened to. It's cool.
Yeah, I can put those links under there. I suppose maybe we can, I'm not sure what's, if we'll have another guest on next week. It was all weird. Weird things have happened this week. And then what happened was my throat chakra really opened up. And it had been really closed for ages. And then I just suddenly thought, I've got things that I need to say this week. So, and that was it, pretty much.
This is Dark City Radio.
So I suppose maybe next week, I'll see who we get on as a guest. I have been chatting to some people, someone about new energy, a few other people, but it'd be good to talk a bit more about design, because kind of, I think really we talked up to the stage there where, we've only got 3 minutes, talked up to the stage where you make a base map, so we can...
Speed up, quick.
We can carry on with that next week, can't we, Bob?
I'll be happy to join you again, Nerys. I enjoyed this evening. Thank you.
Yeah. It was really, really good. Lovely to speak to you. And we'll do some more next week.
Yeah, and grow to survive.
Exactly. Keep planting the seeds. All right then. Well, thank you guys. Thank you, Dark City guys.
Hello, Nerys. You've got 3 minutes left. Could you just quickly say about how you can tell the difference in the soils?
Yeah, definitely. So you mean sort of basically when I was talking about getting a ball, so you take a little ball of soil, then I mean obviously if it's really wet you don't need to spit in it, but generally you will need to put a bit of moisture in there, so spit into it and then squeeze it up, and then have a look, see if it's in, you know, how much organic matter it's got in there. If it's quite a lot, then you're sort of working with peat. If you haven't, you can have a look, see if it's predominantly sandy, and obviously there'll be the little grains there you'll be able to see. If it'll make a stable ball, then it's sandy loam. If it won't, then it's just predominantly sand. If it's silky or buttery and easy to squash, then it's silt or silty loam. If it's hard to squash, or if you rub it and it sort of makes a polish or a matte finish, if it's a polish, then it's clay. If it's a matte finish, then it's clay loam. It sounds quite complicated, that sort of descriptions in the Dropbox file, so you can have a look at it. And from looking, sounds a bit like, how am I supposed to tell that? But start having a little look and, you know, you'll be able to kind of get a feel for it and start to see what you got to work with. And then, you start looking in plants to suit, or, you know, what you might need to add to the soil to improve the structure. Obviously with clay, you're going to want to add some lighter stuff in there, get some looser structure. that's pretty much how you do it.
Yeah, thanks for that. There's a lot to learn, I can see.
There is, but hopefully I've broke it down a little bit tonight, because I just, you know, I think sometimes it can seem intimidating when it's not. The best way to learn is to do it, you know, just do it. And that's how you learn. And then as soon as you start doing it, you research it as well, so you can talk to other people and, you know, give them feedback on what they're doing, and they give you feedback on what you're doing, and sometimes they go, don't do it like that, that's stupid. And then you do it another way, you know. So yeah, it's the oral tradition, the last oral tradition. Right then, I think that's it now. Yeah, we're just about out of time, so thanks for listening. Catch you later. Thanks, guys.